Welcome back to Live Action. We make your source for movie news, TV news, reviews, and recommendations. My name is Diego, and as always, I am joined with my co-host, Ricardo. Ricardo, how's it going today?
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, sorry we missed last week. It was just a tough time transitioning between school and summer, but, you know, we're back. This week, we are covering Shang-Chi and two episodes of What If, so it's pretty exciting. And, of course, 2 weeks of news, so we got quite a bit to get into. Ricardo, why don't we start off with some sad news. We had two big deaths this week that were pretty heartbreaking in their own different kinds of ways. The first, of course, was Ed Asner, who sadly passed away at the age of 91. If you don't know who that is, he was probably best known for playing Old Man Carl from Up, the main character. So, Ricardo, do you know Ed Asner from anything else?
Yeah, if anyone knows the Justice League and like all the DC animated stuff, he was Granny Goodness. There's that. He was also Mr. Wunsler on the Boondocks.
Oh, no way. I didn't know that.
Damn, that's crazy, yeah, man. 91. Good for him.
Yeah, he I believe reprises his role in the upcoming spinoff of Doug Days for Disney Plus, as of course Carl. That movie hit me on an emotional level. I don't really know much more about his filmography, but that movie was probably a top three Pixar movie for me, and it sucks that this guy's gone. I'm glad that he at least is very long-lived, you know?
Oh, yeah, he's got, like, a huge, long legacy and career, and, it's sad to see him go. Like you said, Doug Days, I think he's, like, it's probably his final performance. I guess that's kind of betting, because, you know, that character has, like, touched so many people, and good R.I.P. Ed Asner.
The other big death that actually was announced today, Michael K. Williams, best known from The Wire, has also passed away at the age of 54, a much younger death, so this one it's a big shock to a lot of people. I've actually never seen The Wire, but I know him, and I'm sure you also know him, Ricardo, from Community. He was the biology teacher who gave Jeff a really hard time, and honestly, he was in a lot of some of the best Community episodes of that season, I think. So he's a great actor.
Yeah, I can't say I'm super familiar with him outside of that, like you said, that Community episode. But, you know, 54, that's a tragedy, man.
Absolutely. If you want to see something on YouTube with Michael K. Williams that I really enjoyed, John Oliver, he did a YouTube video. I gotta figure it out what it was called, but basically it was about this family who is extremely wealthy, and they've been hiding behind their money for a very long time. And so he had actors play them in their court and have them seem very evil. So he had Michael K. Williams voicing some of them, and he had Michael Keaton voicing other ones, just like the most evil people. The most evil voices for actors that he could find, just playing these horrible people because you don't see them that often. It was very funny. And Michael K. Williams killed it. It was awesome. But yeah, it's a very sad death. Rough way to start off a podcast, but it was important that it was up top. On a little bit of lighter news, Ricardo, there's some news in the world of Fran Drescher.
Oh my God. What are
you notoriously a big fan of? What's been going on with her lately?
My guy, it's amazing. Your girl, Fran Drescher, has been voted the president of, you know, the set of SAG, the Screen Actors Guild, AFTRA, which I forget what that abbreviation is for off the top of my head. But, you know, I knew she was doing something involving some form of office. I didn't think she would win, so good for her.
It's pretty awesome. For those of you who don't know, Fran Drescher is the nanny, very iconic sitcom, the lead, probably the best outfits in all of sitcom history, I think, probably. I've only seen a few episodes, and I can tell how great she is. So, you know, congratulations to Fran Drescher.
It's like, what? This could be a nanny episode.
Oh, man. It's good stuff. Back to sad news. James Corden, unfortunately.
End of sentence.
We are a little bit late on this one, but if you haven't seen, James Corden, along with several other actors, were stopping traffic in order to promote the new Cinderella movie on Amazon, dancing to a Jennifer Lopez song. I can't even tell you which one. It was, do you know what song it was? I can't even tell you.
Something Loud. I don't know. You ever see a video that just kind of makes you wonder what we're doing? Like a good day.
It was Let's Get Loud. Let's Get Loud, that one. I think it was the video that the internet came together on for the first time and decided this was the worst possible thing. It was a weird promotional stunt. Check it out. Let us know what you think. I've not heard great things about this movie, by the way. So I don't know if it was worth it.
Ain't that odd that the internet did unite? Everyone came together, no more arguing, to agree that James Corden fucking sucks.
And the worst part, look, I have nothing against like Camila Cabello or any of the other cast members, but James Corden was right next to this dude who was recording in the window, just thrusting for no reason. It was horrible, just as a mouse. I assume he's playing Gus. Horrible. Just bad time all around.
You see what's become of, you know, entertainment, and you're like, was it worth it?
I don't think it was.
Was any of this really worth it in the end? Ricardo, that's what I think about when I think about James Corden.
Very untalented, that James Corden, except for some musicals. I kind of liked him in Into the Woods, but that's about it. Despite PBS canceling the show earlier this year to a thundering applause, Caillou will have 5 CGI specials in 2022. Ricardo, are you happy to have more Caillou in your life?
You can't kill him, man. He a bad bitch. He's back. He's got 5 CG specials coming at you in 2022.
I'm surprised they're giving him specials and not, like, Arthur? Like, the better of the shows that have been canceled in the past year for PBS? I don't think people were crying over Caillou at all. It seemed like a genuine,
we're like, shifting relief to talking about Arthur now, because I'm not joking. How legit excited are you for the series finale of Arthur? I want to know if they're going to put, like, effort into it, or if it's just going to, oh, we're canceled, it ends, just it just kind of stops.
I'm hoping
it's been on TV for, like, 20 years. I think you got to end that with something special.
I think, so far, like, my favorite finale-ish episode, because it technically wasn't the finale, but it was kind of the wrap-up, was the Phineas and Ferb, where you jump to the future and you see Phineas with Isabella. I want to know what it's like for them in the future. I would like a little bit of a time jump. I want to see that. I want to see where Arthur is at. That's what I like.
You want like a sequel series?
No, I don't even need a sequel series.
A la All Grown Up. Regret.
I don't want an All Grown Up for Arthur. I don't think that's necessary. Although I think that could be good for teens. Like a solid, like, let's keep the lessons going, but for teenagers as opposed to kids. I think that could be good. But
PBS, call me. We'll talk.
But no, I want them to wrap up. I want them to, like, jump into their 30s or whatever and see where they're all at, see what's going on. That's what I would like to see. I want to see Buster with, like, I'm assuming, like, a food truck. Like, you know, like, stuff like that. That'd be fun.
I see that.
Miles Teller, after already trying to ruin Hollywood with Fanfoistic, has tested positive for COVID after refusing the vaccine and shutting down production of the Godfather making of series, The Offer. Stupid. This was a stupid decision on Miles Teller's part. And if you didn't get the vaccine,
Miles Teller, quit being an asshole.
Yeah, you're just wrong. And you're not that great in movies. You're in a lot of bad ones, if I'm going to be honest with you. And this is me telling you, get the vaccine and be a better actor. I don't know. It's stupid. This is stupid. This is one person selfishness.
You know what? Get him out of here. We've decided here on this podcast. You'll never work in this town again.
We are officially blacklisting Miles Teller. Us and our 20 us and our 20 listeners have had enough, Ricardo. That's it. We're going to bring him down. We're boycotting Miles Teller movies from now on.
Do you even want to really watch The Offer? Do you know what The Offer is?
It's the Godfather making of. I don't really care about The Godfather that much. I mean, there's good parts to it, but I don't really want to see
it. Have you seen The Godfather?
Yeah, I've seen Godfather 1 and 2, and my mom said not to watch 3, because she's very passionate not to watch 3.
Yeah, she's not wrong. I've only seen the first one.
Oh, 2 is very good. Definitely gotta put that on. Maybe we'll do it when The Offer comes out. And we probably won't, because I feel like they're very long. But who knows?
We'll do Mafia Month.
Hey, we could do Night at the Museum 2, where they have Al Capone played by John Bernthal. That's my pick. Aquaman has shown to have a new suit in Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. It's a stealth suit. Have you seen this guy? Have you seen this one?
Yeah, it's black. It's like the old one, but black.
I think it's more of like a dark green going on, like a teal. I kind of like it. I dig it. I'm a big fan of the Aquaman orange suit, though, that they did. They did make it look pretty awesome in the original movie. But I'm here for more different suits.
Why is he needing a stealth suit? What's going on? What is this movie about?
Well, if you watch the first movie, Ricardo, they go to Six Kingdoms, but they don't talk about the last one. So this is the last kingdom. They're going to go find it. I don't know what it is. I don't know that much about Aquaman, if I'm going to be honest. But, you know, I like the first movie enough.
They're going to find a lost kingdom? They're going on a Nathan Drake Indiana Jones adventure?
Yeah. Except it's Aquaman and an abuser.
Is it ever confirmed? Is she in this movie?
She is in this movie. She has she's returned, for sure.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Should we cancel her with Miles Teller? Are we just Miles Teller, Amber Heard, and James Corden.
We were blacklisting everybody today.
We already got 3. The only person coming out of this happy is Fran Drescher. She's the only one getting our support today. Here's some news I'm pretty excited about, Ricardo. After the success of Shang-Chi this weekend, Venom has been moved up 2 weeks. It's the first movie, I think, in a while that's been moved up to October 1st. So, one that speaks to the success of Shang-Chi, which has been fantastic, and we'll talk about Shang-Chi a little bit more later. But that means we're getting more likely to see Spider-Man No Way Home in December, more likely to see Eternals. This is good stuff for me. I'm excited.
Wow. Sony smelled money. See, you can turn a profit out here. All right. Venom, get out there.
You know what? I'm down. What do you think are the chances? And this is just entirely speculation, Ricardo. I have no proof of this. What do you think that they'll throw Morbius at us in like
a month? I forgot that movie existed.
But it's existed for so long. Like, they have to be like, we want to get rid of
this,
right?
Has anyone talked about Morbius? Even in the news of delays, or like, alright, we're going to switch these around. I never hear anyone talk about Morbius.
I keep forgetting it's a thing. It was like you know what I just remembered was a thing today was also the Top Gun Maverick. Like, I forgot about that one too. I don't care about that movie, but I'm wondering, what if they just go, fuck it, let's throw it in before Spider-Man, so that way, like, they'll know about our universe before the Spider-Man movie. I don't know.
Put it before Spider-Man, that way they have to watch it.
Exactly. Because that movie was supposed to come out before Spider-Man, and now they might go, fuck it, let's do it.
I meant like you go in to see Spider-Man No Way Home. And before that movie starts, you have to watch the entirety of Morbius.
Like,
this
just
is
like
how
that
it is at every screening. Like, they're attached.
Was it Coco where Pixar did that, where they put like, hey, before Coco, you have to watch 35 minutes of Frozen for some reason. Like, it was really weird. horrible.
That was really funny. You hear that Mexico got so mad that they straight up removed it, then they had to start removing it everywhere.
I do remember they removed it everywhere because I saw Coco twice and it wasn't there, and I was so happy. Oh, they're just going to do that for Spider-Man No Way Home. So we're going to be there for like 5 hours. Oh, it's going to be great. Oh, man. Oh, man. This guy, this next one, we might also have to cancel this next guy too, Ricardo. Bruce Willis has sold his likeness to a Russian phone company that deep fakes him into ads, which means he's not even going to be in them. It's just going to be... they're going to put his face onto...
But he is in them. They bought his face. He's in there.
He's not... he's not even going. Like, this is... he... this is the ultimate form of laziness. And... I don't know. Good for Bruce, I guess. Good making money.
This is Bruce Willis's final... the final hump. He officially doesn't care about anything, it seems, anymore.
Nope, it sucks because Bruce Willis is like, he's in like one of my favorite movies of all time, and it just sucks when you see these guys just not giving a shit anymore. It makes me really sad. I love Unbreakable, like that's one of my favorite movies.
Or maybe Bruce is a genius. He doesn't have to do anything. This Russian phone company can have him out there selling phone plans forever, and he's just gonna keep getting paid.
He's playing
4D chess out here.
I get why he's doing it, but he could just... I don't know. You ever see actors and you kind of wonder if they're in desperate need of money? Like, him and Robert De Niro are the top two. I'm like, does Robert De Niro owe someone money? Why is he doing War with Grandpa? Like, why is he doing these stupid movies? And now Bruce Willis is doing this. Because
he's like 75.
But he also does, like, The Irishman and, like, Silver Linings Playbook. And he could just do movies like that. Joker, he could... I know I'm ranting about Robert De Niro now and we're on Bruce Willis, but I'm just... why, when you're such a good actor, why are you doing trash? Why are you doing trash? You don't have to be doing this. I don't know. Bruce, you canceled. That's just... you're on the list, too. You're number four. Ricardo, we're about to get another nickel. Netflix is making another live-action remake of an anime, One Piece. You... have strong feelings about anime and Netflix and live action. So, what you thinking? What you think about One Piece?
I have no real connection to One Piece other than I know, you know, it's about some pirates and a stretchy boy. But Netflix has a sickness, and I think they need help. They can't stop. Why do they keep making these remakes of anime? Not one of them has been successful or good.
Has there never been an anime remake that's been good? I haven't looked too much into it because I'm not big into anime, but like, I know the video game movie genre is just notoriously hard to be good at in it. Is there a good anime live action anything? I don't know.
I mean, I can't think of one.
I can't either. I can think of a couple of bad ones, though. Is it harder? I think it might be harder. We'll tell you when we see Cowboy Bebop. Hopefully it'll be decent. Yeah, it's a weird trend, especially because this hasn't been proven to be effective yet. There's not one to be like, oh, well, we did this at least. Yeah, I don't know. This one's pretty exciting for the both of us, given that. I believe you also love The Book of Life, right, Ricardo?
Oh, yeah, I love Jorge Gutierrez, one of my personal heroes.
Amazing. Well, then you'll love Maya and the Three. The trailer dropped earlier, I believe, last week. And for Netflix, it's an animated series. Looks freaking incredible. I love the art style. Ricardo, you're bigger into animation than I am. Can you talk us through it a little bit?
Oh, yeah, I love the design of these. It's very clearly his style, and, you know, if you've seen Book of Life... and translate into that wood look for that movie. This one, it's all beautiful CG animation, and I think they had a pretty decent budget for this, so it's all, you know, spectacular looking. High five, racial pride.
The colors look amazing. It's going to be kind of a princess warrior situation. Zoe Saldana's in it. It's a lot to be excited about, and it's not a movie. I watched it, and I was like, I can't wait to watch this movie. Ocado was like, no, this is a limited series. So like, oh, this is gonna be lit. Netflix is doing some really cool stuff with animation recently, and I dig it. You know, that's gotta give them that.
If I was gonna nitpick a little bit, I'm not crazy about another. I'm a princess, but I don't want to be a princess. I want to be a warrior story. But, you know, I think everything around it, I think, will kind of make up for that, for me anyway. And, you know, this is going to be the Mexican Disney princess Disney never gave us, so.
I was about to say, you know,
I'll take it.
I was about to say, like, at least someone's doing the Hispanic princess. Like, let's go. Like, Disney, what are you waiting for? All of your stuff is right there, but that's a whole other rant. We also got the Spencer trailer with Kristen Stewart playing Princess Spencer Diana. How did you feel about this one?
It's Kristen Stewart going for her Oscar, I think. We didn't get much of it, but I think her performance looks pretty decent. I don't know much about Princess Diana outside the way that she died. What about you?
Yeah, I don't know much about Princess Diana. I was actually, just a funny story. A couple of months ago, I was listening to a podcast about the Oprah Winfrey, Meghan Markle interview. And they were talking about how, what's his name, the prince? What's his name again?
Fuck.
Harry? I think it's Harry. Prince Harry, and how horrible it was what happened to his mother, and that he had to basically watch, like, the world through the media, like, what happened and all this. And while I was listening to this podcast, I went to myself, and I was talking to myself, and I was like, what happened to his mother? I did not make the connection that he was Princess Diana's son, because I don't follow the royal line, and that I get that it's a very easy thing. Never knew anything about it, so I was like, oh shit, that makes sense. That's traumatic. But I don't know much about Princess Diana. I'm actually pretty happy that Kristen Stewart is getting like a different, better role. I think she's had some pretty bad roles in the past, but she's a very good comedic actress, so I'd like to see what she could do with something maybe a little bit, like, juicier, like a better role. So, I'm definitely going to see this one.
I mean, I know, I think we both know the royals suck, but...
Oh, yeah.
I think, like, even I know through, like, cultural kind of, like, osmosis that there was something about Diana where, like, she was just kind of cool. That's why people really liked her for some reason. I don't know. I'll watch the movie. I'll learn. Maybe it won't end the way I think it'll end.
Yeah, maybe she'll live. I mean, I don't know. No, who knows?
Can you imagine? They just... Surprise! Turns out... Alive. Nothing happened.
And nothing bad happened.
I think more biographies should end that way.
That would be...
Mr. Lincoln, don't go to the play. Alright. And that's the
okay,
end.
Okay, if you say so. Ahead of the Rick and Morty finale, they've been doing a very fun type of advertisement with a live-action Rick and Morty featuring Christopher Lloyd as Rick. I don't know who this kid is. Who is this kid? What is he from?
It's the It kid. He's from It.
Ah, okay. And yeah, he's playing Morty.
And other things, I think. He's the It kid. I don't know.
Do you know who was originally... do you know who was originally asked for that role?
For the role of Morty?
Yeah, so they asked somebody else, but he declined.
Oh.
It was Daniel Radcliffe. Which I think would have been amazing.
He's a grown man.
I know, that would have been even funnier. I think that's great. It's just a fun bit of advertising. I think it's cool that Christopher Lloyd is being Rick, given that Rick was basically based off of them in Back to the Future,
It's finally come full circle.
It's pretty fun. Check out the videos. There's about three of them, and they're all like 30, not even 30 seconds. It might be 10 to 15 seconds each. So it's pretty fun. It's pretty cool.
And maybe it'll lead to a full episode like that.
Oh, that'd be so cool. Next we got, and I'm pretty excited about this, although it kind of feels like what DC's been doing a little bit. Marvel has announced that they are seeking a Latino actor for a Disney Plus Halloween special centered around the character Werewolf by Night. Ricardo, what do you...
Oh, man. Boy, oh, yeah, boy, nothing spookier than Mexicans.
Look, I'm okay a little bit with them going, hey, we're going to introduce characters through Disney Plus specials. Like, I'm sure there's going to be new characters in the Guardians of the Galaxy special. So I'm cool with that, and I'm cool with them trying to do different stuff. I'm a little sad that, again, the first, like, Hispanic character to headline something is going to be on a streaming service and not in theaters, but, you know, what can we do?
There seems to be a pattern going on around here.
We're just good enough for TV, Ricardo. You know what that means? We're getting a TV show. This is our announcement. We're coming to Peacock or something, probably. I don't know.
I mean, I act like I'm not going to watch this. I like Halloween specials.
Yeah, and Werewolf by Night.
I don't really know what Werewolf by Night's deal is. I assume he's a werewolf
at night. By night. Yeah, you get it. You got the gist. That's pretty much it. There's two versions. I guess the second version's Hispanic, so they're sticking to it. Is there anybody you could think of you'd like to join the MCU who's Hispanic? I'm pretty sure they're gonna go 20s, 30s. I'm trying to think. I don't want Pedro Pascal because I think if they do Wolverine, that would be the way to go. Pedro Pascal. So I'm trying to think of other people.
George Lopez.
Lin-Manuel Miranda. Is Werewolf by Night. I'm pretty sure they're gonna go younger though. I don't know.
Baby steps, Diego. They only introduced minorities as animals first. We'll get there.
Yes.
We'll get there. This is our Princess and the Frog trial.
Well, we have Luis and that's it.
Luis is Werewolf by Night. Boom, I did it.
Yep.
And it ties back into another movie. Damn, you love that shit, Marvel.
Yep. It's all coming together. Speaking of things all tying together, Ricardo, they announced finally the next big CW Arrowverse crossover event entitled Armageddon. And it'll be featuring the villain Despero from the comics. Yeah, you know Despero?
Not at all.
So I only know him from one episode of Young Justice. Basically, he comes to Earth seeking champions to fight. So he wants to fight someone like a Superman or like a Shazam, like the top tier guys, so that way he can prove he's the best. And he can hang with them. So he's a pretty big physical villain, so that's kind of cool. The interesting thing about this,
but
though, is
that
these
are all this is the B team. I'm looking at the lineup here.
These are all the people that are announced in this crossover so far. And some of these are interesting, so I wanted to go through them real quick. One, Ryan Choi, who is the Atom in the comics. Ray Palmer, who is the Atom in the Arrowverse. Now, both of these characters have not come back for a while. Actually, Brandon Routh, who plays Ray Palmer, left the show about two seasons ago, I believe. And then we got the new Batwoman, who is Ryan Wilder. So this is her first introduction into the Arrowverse teams. We have the new Green Arrow, Mia Queen, who was supposed to have a spinoff. And fun fact, Ricardo, it didn't get picked up. So this kind of sucks for her that she didn't. This is her first time. She's coming back. Sentinel, who is Alex Danvers, Supergirl's sister. And that show is wrapping up. So this will be the first time she's coming back, not in Supergirl. And Black Lightning, which is the most interesting to me because his show got canceled earlier, actually late last year. So I'm surprised he's coming back as well. And we're getting Damian Dark, who was the main villain of Arrow for season 4. And, of course, Reverse Flash, who Tom Cavanaugh recently announced that he was leaving The Flash as well. So a lot of people are coming back for this one. So that's pretty interesting. That was really the main reason why I wanted to bring it up. I figured there'd be a lot more hurt feelings, but I don't know. It's a lot of people coming back for this crossover.
What do you mean? Did people not leave on good terms?
There were people like Black Lightning, for example, only had, I think, 3 seasons, which if you've been paying attention, the CW shows typically last 7 to 8 seasons, so he got the short end of the stick. Green Arrow, they really set her up, Mia Queen, at the end of the last 2 seasons to be the next one. And they even have a whole spin-off episode, like a backdoor pilot, for that show. And it never got picked up. So it kind of sucks. And you know what? You know what they did pick up instead? The Powerpuff Girls. So I can't imagine she's very happy about that. And of course, Ray Palmer, the Brandon Routh, he left quite a while ago because he just didn't want to do it anymore. So it's interesting to me that they're all coming back in their own different ways.
Diego, I don't think you see the writing on the wall here. You don't think this might be the end?
Oh, I don't think so, because this
is the last CW crossover thing? Are we done? Are we done with the CW?
Look, Ricardo, I would agree with you, except that the 2 latest shows that they've come out with are their best shows by a lot. Like, if you haven't seen Superman and Lois, it is the best piece of Superman media in the past 25 years. By a lot. I get people like Smallville. It's not that good, guys. Superman and Lois is very good. And I'm not a fan of Man of Steel, and I'm not a fan of Batman vs. Superman. This is the best Superman we've gotten in a while. And then if you really like young teenage superheroes, Stargirl is fantastic. It's a great first season. I have not yet started the second season, but the Arrowverse is still kicking it, like, a lot. So I think
those two can survive on their own. Like, if they never meet Grant Gustin, I don't think they'll be that affected.
Well, this crossover is actually the beginning of the season. So the crossover usually happens in the middle of each season for all of them. This one is going to be the first 3 or 4 episodes of each show. So it's literally the beginning, and then they're going to keep going on with the season. So I don't think this is going to be the end of any of these. Maybe a few of these characters, but not the shows. They're going to still be kicking for a while. We also got Cobra Kai has gotten a season 5 renewal ahead of season 4 releasing later this year. Are you a fan of Cobra Kai, Ricardo?
I haven't even seen the original Karate Kid.
Ah, oh, god damn it. This show's so cool. You should check it out. It's like, I watched it because I thought it'd be ironically funny, and I unironically got really into it. And one of the main actors is playing Blue Beetle, and I think you'd really like him, so I definitely recommend checking it out. Netflix is testing out mobile games in Poland. There will be no ads, no in-app purchases, and it's going to be included with a Netflix membership. Ricardo, how are you feeling about Netflix going mobile?
You know what? I think it's cool. Good for Netflix. It sounds like a cool idea. I technically don't have a Netflix account, so if this ever does make its way to America, I wouldn't be able to play any of them.
Why do you not have a Netflix account? Who has your Netflix account, Ricardo?
What are you, Netflix? you work for Timothy Netflix?
It's been the long con. I got you to put it on audio, and now we got him, guys. We got him. We're coming. It's all good. Barry Jenkins' Lion King prequel has casted its young Mufasa and Scar in Aaron Pierre and Kelvin Harrison Jr. This movie is going to revolve around Mufasa's first year as king, as well as Simba's first year as king. So it's going to go back and forth a little bit. How do you feel about the live-action Lion King, and are you excited to see more of it?
No. What the fuck? I didn't like that first one. Why do we keep doing this? Stop.
I think there were parts of it that I liked, but overall, that one felt the most soulless to me. Like, it really lost a lot of the comedy and the fun of the original, with the exceptions of Timon and Pumbaa, which I really liked in this. I am kind of interested, though, because Barry Jenkins is a very good director. I don't know if you've seen Moonlight, but it's a fantastic movie, so I'm hoping they can do some interesting things with a little bit of back and forth. I think if they were to make another Lion King movie, though, they should do 1.5. If they're going to do a remake of one, I think Billy and Seth Rogen would do a fantastic job of that.
I'll give them this. It's a different story, it looks like. We've never seen it like played out on a like in media. Scar and Mufasa's young days. So I didn't know about the whole jumping back and forth thing, though.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like year one of both of them and how they kind of parallel and stuff. So I think it's an interesting idea. I'm wondering if they're going to follow a little bit more of the like Lion King 2 Simba's Pride kind of thing, or if they're going to do something different with Simba. I don't know. Letitia Wright was injured filming a stunt on set of Wakanda Forever. Hopefully she's doing okay. But the fact that she's doing major stunts kind of leads me to believe, and this is, of course, rampant speculation, that she's Black Panther? And this may be her movie?
You think she's Black Panther?
I think that she's going to take up the mantle. If there's anyone in the movie right now that's going to take it up, it's going to be her. My second idea as to who it would be, and this also is just rampant speculation, but if you've watched the What If trailers, we know for a fact that there was a Killmonger-centered episode, which means there was a multiverse where Killmonger presumably wins. That character, maybe the multiverse is opened up, maybe he enters the world of this Black Panther, maybe Killmonger is the new Black Panther of our universe. Just a thought, but if not him, definitely Shuri. That's my thought.
Isn't Killmonger going to have to go through like some kind of redemption arc? I don't think...
Of course, that's what If is for.
And then he just pops from What If into live action.
I think he'd be the easiest transition because the character seems very similar to the one from the movie. I also think, like, if you watch the trailer, and I don't want to be spoiling this for people who don't watch the trailer clip for clip like I do, but there's a moment where you see the team of all the heroes that are assembled from the whole season, and one of them is Killmonger in his golden outfit. So Killmonger isn't necessarily an antagonist in the show. He's going to be a protagonist. So maybe there is a redemption arc for Killmonger. Or maybe, and this is also me just speaking out loud, maybe Killmonger isn't a bad guy. Maybe what he was saying wasn't that bad of an idea. Who knows?
When I say redemption arc, I mean there's no way Disney is going to market a main part of their universe when that's his motivation and backstory. They have to do something to him. They cannot sell Happy Meal toys of Kill Whitey.
I would absolutely take my kid every day, if I had a kid, if that was the toy, to McDonald's. I would absolutely. That would be fantastic. But those are just my ideas. I like, again, this is a rampant speculation, and I hope Letitia Wright's okay. But I think if you're having Letitia Wright do these kinds of stunts, sounds like you're putting her in a Black Panther suit. That's just my idea.
Maybe she just hurt herself doing science.
That's also technically possible, but Shuri has gauntlets. Like, she doesn't fight with, like, big stunts. So, I don't know. This one's pretty cool news. Dancing with the Stars will have the first same-sex pairing featuring JoJo Siwa. That's pretty cool. I think that's pretty dope. I watched more Dancing with the Stars than I feel like I've let on in my life.
You've watched Dancing with the Stars?
Oh, absolutely. You know Chris Hemsworth was on Dancing with the Stars?
But he has a career. What is he doing? No,
not a sitcom, what's it called? Like a telenovela, but for people. Days in Our Lives? What are those called in English?
Soap operas?
Soap opera, there we go. I was like telenovela, but English. He was in those, and I guess he thought his career was done, so he was on in like 2003, Chris Hemsworth. But also sometimes they have like people who haven't blown up yet. Like Zendaya was on there too before. Listen, Dancing with the Stars is quality programming, and I'm not gonna argue otherwise. It's just the truth. But that's really cool that they're progressing. That's pretty awesome.
Good for JoJo Siwa. She seems to be having a pretty good time since coming out.
Yeah, it's cool. I still think she's a little annoying, but you know, it is what
it is. What has she done to anybody?
She talks really fast, and her hair is too tight. That's it.
All right, man. And she's just vibing. She's entertainer.
Yeah, she is just a kid. I mean, I have no beef with her, but she's got to slow down. Out of the two
people here, I've been to a JoJo Siwa show.
You've been to a JoJo?
I've told you that, right?
I feel like you have, but I'm still shocked to hear it out loud. Why were you there?
Yeah. Because back when I used to work at the Pabst Theater, we got dispatched to all like the pretty much the main theaters in the city. So that's like the Turner Ballroom, the Riverside. And this one summer, JoJo Siwa was doing a show in Milwaukee. So we were dispatched out there as staff out to where they host Summerfest. And yeah, I got to sit in on a JoJo Siwa concert for a night.
Did you put your hair back in the ponytail? Like, why? What does she do? Like, honestly, I don't know what she does. What was the show?
I'm trying to remember. Like, she came out on roller skates. She was pretty good with those. She did some tricks. I think she sings songs. I don't know. But there was a lot of people there. It was a surreal experience.
Good for her. You know what? She's having a time. And this one, this last bit of news was, I was convinced to keep it on the docket by Ricardo. Apparently Martin Luther King Jr. is in Fortnite now. I don't know. What does that even mean? Is he killing?
Do you not even know what that means?
I really don't. I don't play Fortnite.
What did you think it meant when I put that on the docket?
I assumed that either meant that like you can play as him, or like he's a character that you could kill. Like, I didn't know what it meant. Like, you had to beat him or something. I've never played Fortnite. I'm not 100% sure how it works.
It was some kind of Fortnite event. It was Time Presents a Walk Through Time. And you go into this recreation of Washington, D.C., but it's in Fortnite. And near the Washington Monument, there's a big screen that plays footage of the I Have a Dream speech. There's a museum area you can go to that has like pictures and stuff from the civil rights movement. There are challenges you can complete. And most people used it to have Rick from Rick and Morty dab in front of the I Have a Dream speech. Or, you know, Fedora Joker hanging out near Rosa Parks.
I hate this. This is absolutely stupid.
We're reaching the children, Diego. Do you not think it was a good idea to get them in their Fortnite? You know, my grandson plays Fortnite.
I can't stand this. I'm literally having a migraine right now just hearing this thing. Like, this meal. Who thought this was a good idea?
This is from Time Magazine, with I think some of the Martin Luther King family I think was involved.
This is amazing. I can't even. No, I'm not. I'm done. I'm done talking about this. This is so weird. Fortnite has gone too far. There's too many things in it at this point. I don't know enough. I'm too far behind. I can't get into it. I'm glad people are learning. I don't know. It's a weird time to be alive, I guess. That's all the news we had this week. If we missed anything, or if you want to know more, or if you hated what we said, feel free to email us at liveactionremakepodcast@gmail.com. Next, we got two episodes of What If in the past 2 weeks, so we're going to get to them. So if you have not seen the latest episodes of What If, feel free to pause this episode and go check them out on Disney Plus right now. Episodes 3 and 4, What If the World Lost Its Mightiest Heroes, and What If Doctor Strange Lost His Heart Instead of His Hands. All right, Ricardo, first we got What If the World Lost Its Mightiest Heroes, Episode 3, which is kind of going through what is called, quote-unquote, Fury's Big Week. Do you know what this is, Ricardo, the comic?
Oh, it's an actual comic.
Well, there is a comic called Fury's Big Week because, like, it's not explicitly said, but Iron Man 2, Thor, the Incredible Hulk, and finding Captain America's body from Captain America the First Avenger is all in 1 week. That is canonically true. So it's just like a really busy week for S.H.I.E.L.D. And that's what this whole episode was. It really kind of does most of phase one in this episode, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, we go through all of those. Except we don't get the big Avengers.
Yeah, it's a murder mystery, which I think this might be the most original episode and my favorite so far. This was a lot of fun for
me. What if the Avengers got fucking murked? That's this episode.
Yeah, and some of them go out pretty lame, to be honest. Like, some of them were pretty lame. Like, I expected Iron Man to put up more of a fight, but they just got him lacking. And
how is he supposed to know? He got injected.
No, I know, but he got the lamest death of the ones who died. And no,
and I think Hulk got the greatest death.
Oh, absolutely. They had to get creative with that one, which was pretty good. But we also have to talk. I think we have to talk about this because this is. I'm pretty sure I've had this conversation with you on the podcast. But we've had a conversation that Hawkeye has always found a way to lose every fight he's in. But he beat Thor. So is Hawkeye now the most powerful Avenger? Can we put that? Is he at least top 5 now? Because I think Thor is top 5. He kills Thor.
Well, Thor was also just, like, a guy.
No, I know.
He'd been banished.
No, I know.
So what you're saying to me is Hawkeye murdered an unarmed man.
Yes. Hawkeye is a true American cop.
And then Hawkeye himself straight murdered.
He just gets poisoned.
How did he die? I don't remember.
I think he gets poisoned. I think his was also very uneventful. Like, not very cool. Hulk's by far was the best. But let's go through it. Let's start from the beginning. Where basically Fury is trying to assemble the Avengers. I think if anyone, this is Nick Fury's episode, maybe kind of Black Widow's episode. But Black Widow is framed for the death of Iron Man when she tries to inject him with the kind of antidote-ish thing for his sickness. But it ends up killing him for some reason. And then we kind of go on the spiral of someone is trying to kill the Avengers. Ricardo, did you at one point guess who it would be? Because I had a guess, and I was close, but it was not on target. But did you have any idea who you thought it might be?
No, I was pretty wrapped up in the mystery. I think I figured it out maybe like a couple seconds before it was like straight up revealed.
Okay.
I think, like you said, I think this might have been my favorite one so far, just because it does go in different directions, and I like murder mysteries in general, and I think this was a pretty decent one.
And the cool thing about this particular murder mystery, and I have to give credit to Mr. Sunday Movies because they said this first, but when it was phase one, we couldn't have had a story like this because we had not seen the wider Marvel Universe yet. We have not seen the other characters in this universe at this time. But once we have this wider universe, and once we know that all these actors are coming back, there's, like, literally anybody who it could be. There was a large number of possibilities. It could have been anyone from Rocket Raccoon to freaking Shang-Chi. It could have been. Like, we have no idea who it was.
For most of the episode, I was like, it's Loki, right? Just reveal it's Loki. I'm right. It's Loki.
So he was my thought. I assumed when they said Hope, I was like, oh shit, it's Ghost. Ghost is killing the Avengers for Hydra. And I was like, that makes sense. Okay, that's why they can't see him, because it's Ghost. Okay, bet. And it wasn't. It was a much, much better reveal for me. I loved the fact that Hank Pym got to do something for once. And it was the Yellow Jacket version of Hank Pym, which I love that costume design. Good on him. It was fantastic.
I really liked Hank Pym's design as a whole in this episode. I think it's mainly the crazy eyebrows they decided to give him.
Well, like the...
But they really accentuated, like, I'm a crazy person.
You can see the bags in his eyes, and he looks like he hasn't slept in days. Like, he's just heartbroken about Hope. I like that motivation. I like that that's what drives him off the deep end. And just as a comic book fan, if y'all don't know, like, Hank Pym has gone off the deep end before. Like, this is the most accurate version.
It's like his whole thing.
Yeah, it's... And
like, the one thing people remember about his comic history is that he beat his wife.
Yeah, he does. He's a very dark character. And so the fact that they decided that, you know, like, no, we're not going to pull... He's going to kill the Avengers was awesome. And it also spoke to just the power and intelligence of Hank Pym, which I feel like we have not seen enough of. I love Hank Pym as a character, and I wish they would have done more with him in the MCU. So I'm glad that they're finally doing something.
My man's blew up the Incredible Hulk like the State Puff Marshmallow Man.
Yes, he did, which was pretty funny. Was it jarring for you to see Mark Ruffalo in the Incredible Hulk movie?
It was jarring to me that Marvel even acknowledged that movie's existence.
There's like a whole... That whole scene is from The Incredible Hulk, which was... Yeah, they even bring back an old character. They bring back his love interest. What's her freaking name? I can't... Betty. Betty Ross.
Betty. Betty Ross.
Yes, yes, yes.
Daughter of General Thunderbolt Ross.
Both of which who are replaced in this episode. They are the ones that are not... That did not come back for this. Actually, quite a few people did not come back for this one. But they saved the big ones, at least.
Sam Jackson, he's great in this. I had a really good time with his Nick Fury trying to solve this mystery.
Oh, yeah. It's good to see Nick Fury doing something different. Oh, at what point in the fight with him and Yellow Jacket were you like, that's not Nick Fury? It was very early on for me when he's...
I got a pretty big hint early on, and then the flip happened. It's like, okay, that's not Nick Fury.
It was that was pretty funny. I had a good time with that fight. I like Loki in this one a lot as well, just because, and I don't think we got to see this enough in the earlier movies, like his love for Thor. He's actually upset that Thor is dead. Like, you assume that he's coming to invade because he's like Loki, but he's mad that his brother has passed away while banished on Earth. He didn't want Thor to die. That was, and I felt like that was honest of Loki. So I was like, you know, good on it. Good on for the continuity a little bit. It helps.
You,
it helps.
You get it, too. You're on his side, sorta.
Absolutely. We also got the return of Sith, the Destroyer. Like, it was very original Thor movie, so I like that. We didn't get much of Iron Man 2. We didn't get the racetrack or any of that stuff, but I mean, I guess it's fine.
And, you know, just like I think the last one, it ends on a not happy ending. Loki takes over the world. He wins.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Because the Avengers are dead.
But it does kind of leave a little bit of hope because of this. The other nice continuity thing they do is that they bring Captain Marvel in, because Nick Fury has that pager and he didn't use it in the Avengers for some reason. But he brings Captain Marvel in, and they found Captain America, because Captain America was the only Avenger that they didn't get to yet. So they're assembling a team again. It's going to be a different Avengers, but there's like a little bit of hope. So I like that kind of sad but hopeful ending.
We got Captain Marvel, Captain America.
That's it.
Other Pete, War Machine.
War Machine, yes.
Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange is not alive yet. They might be able to get a Black Panther, like a T'Chaka, but he'd be old. That's about it. Oh, there's one more character. There was a couple of switches in this episode of actors, but the one who had the most lines and was the biggest switch was probably Lake Bell as Black Widow. I thought she did a pretty good job. I liked it. I thought it was good.
Yeah, she was really good.
Yeah, it's not as as seamless a transition as as the Chris Evans stand-in for the first episode, but it was good. It had personality. I like Lake Bell. If you don't know, she is also Poison Ivy in the Harley Quinn animated series. She did a good job. I was cool with it. But yeah, overall, my favorite episode. It really had me hooked. I didn't know where it was going. I loved Yellow Jacket. I hope that we get to see more of this version of Hank Pym. I don't think we will, but that would be a lot of fun for me. Next we got, what if Doctor Strange lost his heart instead of his hands? Or, as people would like to call it, what if Doctor Strange gave a shit about Christine Palmer?
What if he wasn't a huge asshole to her for most of her life?
This was a dark episode, and I appreciate that they took such a swing with this one. I liked it a lot. This one, I think, had the most people coming back for this episode. Almost, I think everybody who was in the MCU already came back, which is cool. They had one new actor who played Obane, but other than that, everybody was back. This was basically a Doctor Strange sequel, which I enjoyed it a lot. How'd you feel about this episode overall?
Overall, I'm not crazy about this episode. That's mainly because the whole thing is kind of hinged on a trope I really don't like. Is when we got your hero, their love interest dies, and they go off the deep end. So I'm evil now because there's no one else in my life I care about. I have no friends or family.
So you're not cool with
the... That's also kind of why they do that a lot with Superman. It's like, if Lois Lane were to ever die, he'd just murder everyone. Nothing matters anymore.
I will give them that this one is a little bit more of a nuanced take than Injustice Superman. Because Injustice Superman is just ridiculous. This guy, he has good intentions. He's just, as the Watcher would say, on the wrong path. But I do understand that this is a fridging storyline. That at the end of the day, that's what this is, which isn't always great.
I really liked the universe hates Christine Palmer montage. I thought that was really funny.
I was also like, what the... The thing about this episode, which is the funniest to me, is that the Ancient One's like, she has to die or you would never be Doctor Strange, right? It's a central point to your character. But it's like, no, it isn't. We know for a fact that's not true as an audience because we've seen Doctor Strange in the movie. Christine Palmer did not die in that one. So I found that ridiculously funny. But yeah, the montage... I think we talked about this a little bit, but my favorite part is at one point he actually gets her there and there's no problems. But she just has a heart attack. It's so unnecessary how mean they are to Christine in this episode.
She has a heart attack. There's one where it's like, you know what? Let's just go somewhere else. Let's get pizza. And then the place is robbed and Christine gets shot in the face.
Isn't there one where he doesn't pick her up and her whole apartment goes on fire or something like that? It's just
He turns on. Yeah, he turns on the TV. It's like, this apartment mysteriously exploded. The only casualty was one Christine Palmer.
It was killing me. I saw this episode a couple of times because I just thought that was so funny. But yeah, it follows Steven as he is trying to, after the events of Doctor Strange. So this one is interesting because this one is all the events of Doctor Strange are basically the same, except he doesn't, his hands are not broken, it's just that Christine dies. And so he still fights Dormammu, he still does all that stuff, but 2 years later, he's so heartbroken by this that he's trying to bring her back. And he is struggling to do so. So yeah, we get this whole montage of Christine Palmer dying. Rachel McAdams and Benedict Cumberbatch, I gotta say, both did an excellent job in this one. And I really praised Chadwick Boseman for his role as Star-Lord. He did fantastic. I think Benedict Cumberbatch might have one-upped him in this episode. I loved Benedict Cumberbatch's performance in this episode. I don't know. How'd you feel about it?
You know, honestly, I've never really been into Benedict Cumberbatch's Doctor Strange. It's never fully clicked for me.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I feel like he had some really good emotional lines that hit me. Like, even the line at the end of the montage where she's driving him and he's just like, I just want you. And then, like, he already knows the car's coming. It hit me. I thought, like, damn, this sucks. And when he's saying, like, they didn't know her. Like, they didn't...
I'm not saying he's, like, a bad actor or he's bad in the role. Just, like, for me, like, even when I saw, like, the Doctor Strange movies, like, he... Just to me, he doesn't feel like Doctor Strange.
Okay.
And I'm trying to break down why I feel that way, and I think it's because, at least from the comics I've read, because there's one run in particular that I really, really like. Like, kind of, he's got like an air of competence. Like, even from the movie, I didn't really buy. Like, why are you the Sorcerer Supreme? Like, he did a few things, but he's not. Like, the Stephen Strange from the comics, he's, like, saved the universe countless times. But also, they make it very clear being Doctor Strange sucks. Like, your body mutates because of all its surrounding with magic to the point where you can't even really eat food anymore. You gotta eat, like, this gross mystical stuff. But, and I'm going on a tangent.
It's fine. It's cool. I mean... All I was saying that Doctor Strange in this episode, I felt for him in a way that I don't think I felt for any of the other characters in this series so far. And I think that has to go with Benedict Cumberbatch's performance. I do get you, though. I kind of feel the same way about, like, Ezra Miller's Flash. It doesn't exactly click for me, even though he's not necessarily doing anything wrong. So, to each of their own. Let's see who else is in this.
I like that Evil Strange and Regular Strange both have different voices.
Oh, yeah, they do. It's a pretty good voice. It's pretty good voice work.
That climax scene also, I'm always up for more Doctor Strange wizard battles. I don't think they've really tapped what they can do with those creatively with Marvel yet. But this one was really, really good.
It definitely reminded me of the Thanos Doctor Strange mini fight, which is still one of my favorite fights in the MCU. Just all of the, like, yeah, they're just throwing all these different moves at one another. I love that their visual magical styles were different. I like that their capes fight. I thought that was pretty funny. That was one of the top five moments in this episode for me, with the capes fighting. It was good stuff.
The way he becomes evil Doctor Strange, I think it's a good idea on paper. I think the way they do it is a little lame, where he just summons these things in this one, like, he sits in this one room for centuries just summoning and essentially eating these demonic entities. It just felt really easy. Like, it felt like, oh, he's probably been doing this for like a week.
Yeah,
I think it would have been maybe a little more interesting if we saw him going through these different areas where these monsters lie and, like, hunting them down to absorb them. I think just visually that would have been more interesting, but...
Yeah, I was thinking the same.
End result is still cool.
Oh, yeah, I love his final, like, big monstrous form, but I do agree, I think it would have been beneficial for just to see him, like, traveling to different worlds. Not even just, like... different dimensions. If he was just going to different planets and, like, fighting, like, Groots, like, magical Groots, would have been pretty cool, like, stuff like that. I would have been down for that. But yeah, his overall look and style, I love the redesign of the, like, evil Doctor Strange. I was here for it. And I was getting at, I think, and this may just me, maybe just me being hopeful, if there is any character so far that could hop into the MCU proper, out of everyone that's been shown so far, it is this version of the character. Because he has nothing to go back to. So,
Oh, yeah. Spoiler, I guess, for anyone that hasn't seen this episode. All of reality... caves in on itself
because this man's an asshole and he doesn't listen to anybody. I also, this may just be me, I think, I get what they were going for, the idea that Doctor Strange fighting an evil version of himself. Cool, on paper, not a bad idea. The fact that they gave this Doctor Strange so many centuries ahead of the other one, though, I think we all knew where the fight was going to end, like who was going to win. Not only did he summon all of these creatures, but he's had centuries to do it. Doctor Strange, the good one, did not have a chance. So I thought it'd be cooler if maybe the ancient one fought him and lost. I think that would have been a better climax to the episode.
Maybe the Watcher could do something for once. He came close. He's in it. He becomes a player a little bit.
He has a fun conversation
with him. But he has yet to interfere.
See, that's one of the moments where I was like, Benedict Cumberbatch is killing it. And also Jeffrey Wright, I gotta say, because he hasn't had a chance to interact with anybody yet. But their confrontation between one another, it was tense, and I felt it. I felt the both of them, just Jeffrey Wright's pure anger with what Doctor Strange did. But Doctor Strange's pure confusion as to why he won't help him. Just help him out a little bit, please. I also want to say, a couple episodes ago, we called, when would the Watcher step in? And I think on a technicality, I won, because I said 4. I said episode 4.
Yeah, he has yet to interfere.
He stepped in.
He spoke to him. He said a little something, but he did not act. He set no things in motion.
He did do absolutely nothing. And that is fair. I like the Hulk.
Which, yeah, that's the Watcher's MO. Constantly talk about, I am the harbinger of all knowledge. I see everything. Oh, man, that's awesome. Could you help me? You seem to know things that I don't. No.
Jeffrey Wright had a good performance, though. The back and forth, I really liked between them. I also like, and I don't think she's going to get enough credit for this episode, Rachel McAdams. Did a really good job on the when she sees Doctor Strange and just the horrifying screams and just her running away. It was good. It was good stuff.
That was really good. Just her reaction to the Lovecraftian nightmare happening around her.
Overall, it was a good enough episode for me. I understand the problems with it, but it had enough fun things that kept me going in it. Including the montage of just killing Rachel McAdams, which is just good stuff. I do hope this version of the character is in Doctor Strange 2. I would like to see him fight our Doctor Strange. I think in live action, it could be a lot of fun.
Are we moving on to Shang-Chi?
Yeah.
Shang?
Yes.
It's Shang-Chi.
Yeah, let's wrap this one up, and let's move on to the film of this week. Let's go.
We don't have our usual Marvel multiverse thing, because we got an actual new MCU thing out there. We got Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings this week.
Yes, so we will be watching Phineas and Ferb Mission Marvel next week, and we will get that to you then. But yeah, we're going to be talking Shang-Chi right now. So if you have not seen the movie, go to theaters. This is the first time I think I've said this on the podcast. Like, you go to theaters, because that's the only place you can see it. Watch the movie. We're going to be talking about it right now. Wear a mask when you go. Also get vaccinated before you go. And, yeah. So, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. The first MCU movie since Spider-Man Far From Home that is exclusively in theaters, Ricardo. This is pretty exciting. How was your theater experience?
You know, It felt like coming back. Like, oh yeah, this is the theater experiences I remember. There's a lot of families here. There's a lot of people with phones. Like, this is your everyday screening. Like, the times I've been back to a theater were for a niche anime fathom event.
Awesome.
And the day release of a new DC movie. But this was your average matinee screening. It was like, oh yeah, this is what it's like most of the time.
Yeah, it was. This one felt the most packed for me. I've seen 5 movies since the pandemic in theaters, and most of which have been varying degrees of like 7 or 8 people in the theater. This one was packed. There was a baby crying. There were phones. There was people walking in front of me while things were happening. It was great. It was, I was home again, Ricardo. It was
nature is healing.
But let's get into it. What are your initial thoughts on Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings?
Yeah, in terms of a Marvel origin movie, I had a good time. I think it's a little better than your average, like, you know, solo movie. I think Simu Lee, is that how you say that?
Simu Liu.
Yeah, I really enjoyed him as an actor and just as a stunt performer. What are your general thoughts on this one?
I had a blast. I think the movie might have gone on a little bit longer than I would have liked. I think there was one point where it felt like perhaps there was maybe one too many things in this. If I had to compare it to a movie off the top of my head, it kind of reminds me of Aquaman, but better. I mean, this is a better paced movie with not as much going on, but still like this fantastical world and these really likable characters that you follow, a fun villain. It felt like, it does feel like the MCU's Aquaman in a lot of ways. I don't know. Do you get what I mean? Like, it's just a lot of fun. And
it's such a, you say that right now, and I had never thought that before, and now it's like, yeah, that's exactly correct. I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's got that vibe.
It is like a better paced Aquaman, because there's like a lot of stuff happening.
Oh, yeah.
But this movie also kind of moves at a clip, like every scene kind of flows into the next. It's like, like, there's no stops in this movie.
No, but everywhere we go, I enjoyed. Like, I loved every new part. There wasn't a part where I went, I wish we could go back to this. I was in it at all points. There's a lot of flashbacks, and you have to be okay with a lot of flashbacks. But I was. I was 100% on board. Similar to you, I loved Simu Liu. I thought he was so seamlessly transitioned into the role. Like, I bought him immediately. I got what he was about. And I thought they weren't going to give him any emotional moments. It seemed like he was just kind of, like, coasting for us. Maybe, I don't want to say coasting, but he has a lot of charisma, and it was kind of like Paul Rudding it, where he just, like, went with it. But there's a moment in the movie where he's talking with Awkwafina where you can see the pain and his moments with his father. I love this character. This is a fantastic character, and if Spider-Man No Way Home doesn't bring it, this might be the best MCU movie of the year. It's a strong possibility for me. I had a blast with this movie, and I want to get more into it. So why don't we go through the general story? Shang-Chi is the son of the Mandarin, or Wen Wu, as he likes to be known. He doesn't like the name Mandarin, as we learn in the film.
There's a lot of Iron Man 3 course correcting in this movie.
Yes, which I am very happy about. Shang-Chi and his sister are raised by Wen Wu and their mother, who was the protector of Tao Lao, a mystical village. And they live together until their mother passes away from people who were wronged by the Mandarin. And since then, Shang-Chi was raised to be an assassin, and his sister was just disregarded in the family. And so as we meet...
So you're telling me his father was a mercenary. He trained his son to kill from the moment he was born.
Yes.
Do you not remember that bit from the Suicide Squad?
Oh, yeah. I thought you were getting in. I don't know why I thought you were about to make a direct correlation between them and, like, Thanos, because I kind of have one. Because, like, because he's Gamora and she's Nebula, right? Like, it's kind of similar.
I guess there's a lot of that going around.
There's a little bit of father issues in the MCU, if you haven't noticed. But at 14, Shang-Chi is sent on a mission to kill the person who killed his mother. But instead, he escapes to San Francisco and just goes by Sean and then becomes a valet, parking guy with Awkwafina.
Is that ever explained? Like, how does he get... Like, he went to an American high school. How did he get the paperwork to do that?
I'm not sure.
Where did he live?
I have to imagine the fact that he is an assassin and that he was trained in such a way. Like Aladdin-ing it. He knows what to do. He figures his way around things. He could kill anyone who he needs to get by, I assume. But one thing I really like about this movie, and I don't know if you agree, Ricardo, but the fact that they are like valet, they park cars for a living, they're content with that, and then they go on this whole fantastical journey, and at the end of the movie, there's really no reason for you to believe that they've decided that's still not what they like to do. they're just still valet people. I think it's nice. It's nice that, like, yeah, they're happy. They're content. You don't need to do more if you don't want to. I was kind of cool with that, like, subtle message. I don't know if you felt the same.
Be a valet for the rest of your life.
If you wanna, go for it. Like, I don't know. They're happy. They're having a time. Like, the whole notion of, like, the quote-unquote grow-up lady, I was like, yeah, screw her. Like, let them do what they're doing. They don't seem to be hurting anybody. But I don't know. I liked that. But they are quickly attacked by the Ten Rings because Wen Wu believes that they can bring their mother back, which is not the storyline I thought they were going to go with the Mandarin. And I'm quite...
Yeah, right? That's not what I thought his motivation for this was going to be at all.
No, and I quite liked that. I think Wen Wu was one of the biggest surprises for me. I knew he was going to have a cool physical visual style. I didn't think I was going to feel for him by the end of this movie. And I did.
Yeah, he's just kind of cool. He's real chill. He doesn't really raise his voice. But, you know, don't fuck with him, because he got them rings.
Well, he is...
Which I was not expecting the Ten Rings to be as cool as they did in this movie. They really found some creative ways for how these rings work and what they can do.
Oh, yeah, they can whip them. You can, like, blast them through the ground. You can make, like, a Dragon Ball Z bolt kind of thing. You could do whatever you want with those things as long as you're creative. You know,
you can boomerang them, throw them off your arm, they come back.
Isn't it crazy that I think these guys did cooler things with rings than Green Lantern did? Like, isn't that kind of weird? Like, I mean, that Green Lantern has way more potential. But no, these guys did it way better. But yeah, Wen Wu has a really great story. I really like Xia Ling as well. I believe I'm saying her name right. Shang-Chi's sister in this movie, who is basically abandoned by everyone and becomes a badass on her own. Loved it. I loved her character. She was super cool.
Yeah, she runs an underground fighting ring, which Wong is at for some reason.
I love
him and the Abomination are bros.
I don't know if you saw this tweet, but like, I guess someone tweeted like, I want a Disney Plus series where we just find out what the hell Wong's been doing this all time, because apparently he knows people. And Benedict Wong retweeted it with like a like emoji. So yeah, let's do a 6-episode Wong series where he's just hanging around with random people in the MCU, just doing shit that we don't know about. I'm down. I would be into it.
Everyone you forgot about from the past MCU movies, they all hang out with Wong.
Yeah, Ghost Rider.
You got Abomination. Yeah, Ghost Rider probably hangs out with Justin Hammer.
Yeah. God, think.
All the losers.
Speaking of the losers of the MCU, they brought back a big one that I was not happy to see. You know what I'm talking about?
They bring back Trevor, everybody. He's in the movie.
I can't believe that he's in the movie. I was upset that he was alive. I'm not gonna lie. I assumed that he was dead. I was really hoping that they were gonna be like, this is where we buried him. That was like what I was hoping the extent of Trevor Slattery would be. But no, he's in this movie. And if you don't know who Trevor...
they keep him around. He's entertaining, I guess.
Would he be? I don't think he would be. But, you know, it's that's just me. If you don't know Trevor...
Wenwu thinks he's funny.
If I were Wenwu, he'd be tortured. Like, that dude dragged Wenwu's name through the mud, basically. Which was... He was clearly mad about. Like, he was like... He was mad that he was called the Mandarin specifically, which was pretty funny. But yeah, Trevor's in this movie, and he plays a part which I wasn't entirely against, I guess, but I didn't want to see him again.
Yeah, he helps. He does. He has the... That dog thing that has a butt face.
I think it's a Morris, and I'm pretty sure he's a moth. Like, he's less like a big moth. But it's...
Is that what that's supposed to be?
I think so, because it's, like, big and fuzzy, and it's got, like, six legs. So I, like, oh, it's like a moth. I don't know. It was cute. I was here for it.
I thought it was just, like, a dog creature that had an ass on both ends. I thought that's what that was.
It's a pretty decent description of that thing, but yeah. We get a couple of assassin characters for Wenwu's Ten Rings. Did you have any strong feelings about Razor Fist or Death Dealer?
Which one is Death Dealer?
He's the one in all blue with a white mask.
Oh, like that weird kabuki mask thing?
Yes, that's Death Dealer.
Oh, I like Razor Fist's car.
I also like Razor Fist's car.
This movie really, it's held up by its fight scenes. Let's talk about, like, the bust scene. Oh. That's, like, the first major one of the movie. That's a great introduction into the type of fights this movie offers. Like, the stunts he does while in this enclosed space, I think it's very Jackie Chan in that it's very, oh, shit, I don't want to hurt anybody, and it's a lot of really crazy moves.
Yeah, he is extreme, like, not extremely, but he's pretty outnumbered. And yet you get the sense that none of these people are a problem to him. Like, until Razor Fist enters the fight, these people are taken out fairly quickly with moves, combos where he's taken on a few at a time. He's also, like, doing flips around the bus while it's driving, like, while it's going fast. That stuff I really liked. And it's not like Captain America the Winter Soldier where you're like, oh, well, Captain America's enhanced, so of course he can take these guys on. It's made pretty clear that he's just a dude. Like, he's just a guy.
He's just really good at kung fu. That's his whole deal.
Yeah, and it's great. I think part of the reason why it looks so good is because Simu Liu started as a stuntman. Like, he was on shows like Heroes Reborn as the stunt guys. And so he's worked his way up. He's put in the hard work, and this is what he does. And so we're not doing quick cuts away from him. It's him. It's Simu. He's fighting.
That bamboo fight, the one on the side of that building, that's another good one.
Oh, yes. That's a tense one. And that fight, while it is tense and it has, like, these great moments, I think I kind of got to applaud Awkwafina for, like, her comedic timing. Like, even just her screaming while she's hanging onto bamboo. It's tense, but it's very funny. Like, I was having a good time with that. On a personal note, my dad could not stop laughing at that moment. That was just a good time. But during that fight, he has a couple of... he's fighting a couple of ninjas on the side of a building. He gets into a fight with Death Dealer that looks absolutely beautiful with the neon sign in the back. Oof. The cinematography in this movie is fantastic.
Oh, yeah, especially on the meet-cute for, I guess, the Mandarin and his wife. What was her name again?
Oh, shoot, I can't. Oh, give me a second. I can look it up. But, yes, they're...
But their whole fight, the I-punch-you-counter fight dancing they were doing, that was really well choreographed. And, like you said, the cinematography was beautiful during that part.
Her name was Ying Li, Wenwu's wife, and yes, the use of color, like the green, and the way that she would fight, which was very flowy, and while he was very aggressive, and it's good stuff, and I like that the end of the movie, that the way that Shang-Chi wins isn't by being the aggressive fighter like him, but by being the flowy fighter like his mother, and he kind of does a little bit of both, and which makes him an even better fighter. Love that. Love that little bits of stuff.
I like that that sequence ends with Wenwu gets his ass kicked and then comes back with like lunch and is like, "Hey, can we talk? That was awesome. Teach me to do that." And that's what the relationship was built on.
Yeah, it's weird. I also like the fact that when Wenwu comes to finally like fight these people, he gets really upset and he's like, "Oh, it's because of you that you kicked her out." And he's like, "No. Hold up. We didn't kick her out. We said you're not coming in." Like that's what the first guy is like, "No, we know who you are." Like, absolutely not. I found those interactions very funny. Maybe they weren't supposed to be funny, but I thought that was funny. But yeah, Wenwu has this whole relationship with her, and the part, this is what really got me with Wenwu, was the fact that he gives up the life for her, that he puts the rings down and goes, "I found someone to grow old with." I was like, "Ah, damn it! You're gonna make me love the Mandarin. This is what you're gonna do, Marvel." He might be a top five villain for me now. He's got to be one of my
I
favorites.
remember even in the theater, I really liked that line in particular. Just a good character moment, I think.
And it just amplifies the moment later in the movie when she does pass away, and he's with Shang-Chi and goes like, "I should have never taken these off," and then he takes him. Takes his son to kill those people, which is just such a dark, crazy moment. It's a fantastic villain moment, and I have to give Marvel credit where it's due. They did course correct in a great way with the Mandarin. I love the Mandarin in this film.
Not really a nitpick, but just something I thought would have been a cooler alternative. I don't the f 'cause he thinks he's hearing his wife throughout the whole movie, and it's just like a squid monster behind a rock that's lying to him. And I don't know, that doesn't feel quite as impactful. I don't know, in I was kind of rewriting the movie in my head while I was watching it, but I thought it would have been kind of cooler if maybe he just had like dementia and he just like an actual mental problem that he was having, but he wants like his family together, and that's the way his sickness is kind of manifested. So I don't know, it's kind of fits better into the whole, because the whole time Shang-Chi and his sister, they're trying to talk sense into him, and he refuses to listen to any bit of reason. And I think maybe if it was so all in his head that he was so convinced, like, "No, I don't understand how you don't see this the way I do." I just thought maybe it could be more dramatic that way, but that's just my two cents.
I get you. That could have made the Mandarin the final villain. And that's kind of what I was talking about earlier when I said that this movie kind of keeps going on. The one extra thing I think we could have got without was the Dweller in Darkness, which is what the big monster is called. It just felt like one more thing we had to deal with, which I was like, I don't know. I like the idea of the Mandarin being the final villain, but I agree that it could have been something different. I think I would have preferred if maybe he unleashed Dormammu into this world in a physical way, like, or maybe like a different villain, that another thing Doctor Strange is gonna have to deal with down the line, just another thing on Doctor Strange's plate. I think it could have really tied in the whole Wong at the end of the movie kind of thing.
When I was watching it, I didn't know what the big squid bat thing was. What did you say it was called
The
again?
Dweller in Darkness. I had to look it up because I didn't.
I didn't. Yeah, I didn't know what the Dweller in Darkness was, so I thought he was gonna like release Fing Fang Foom or something, and there was gonna be like a big kaiju fight. I don't know, just something with some backstory to it.
I thought when I saw, because I didn't, because they kept saying the Dweller in Darkness, and I didn't know that character in the comics, but I saw the like bat things. And so I thought they were unleashing Annihilus. And I was like, "Oh shit, Annihilus is in this movie? That's cool. I'm down for Annihilus." But no, they did not do that, which it's a shame. But yeah, I think the Dweller in Darkness was probably the one part of the movie which I could have gone without a little bit. I like the Great Protector. I like the dragon. That was cool. I like Katie. I I like every other character. I actually really like Razor Fist. I thought Razor Fist was more fun for me than I thought he would be. If you don't know, he's actually, he was from Creed 2, the actor. He played, like, the main villain of that movie. So I like the actor. I liked his physical presence. And one thing you don't know that they don't say in this movie, but the actor has confirmed, is that Razor Fist is Wen Wu's adopted son. That is, like, their other brother. Which they don't talk about for some
reason. Fucking what?
Yeah, that's their brother, dude. That's the... He's his adopted son, as well as, like, a lieutenant for him.
Why?
I don't know. They don't bring him up that much, which kind of is weird. But he's,
Did Razor Fist die in this movie? I don't actually remember.
No, Razor Fist is actually by Zhang Ling's side, along with Ronnie Chang at the end of the movie. I also like Ronnie Chang in his little bit in this movie. I like that he flicks off them when they go into the elevator. It's good stuff. But yeah, I don't know if I have many more thoughts on the movie. Overall, it was a fun time. I think the end credit scenes, they're a little vague. They don't get me particularly excited. They leave it pretty open-ended for stuff to come. What about you? Do you have any thoughts on the end credits?
Shang-Chi is basically an Avenger now. He gets called onto the team, meets up with Mark Ruffalo and Brie Larson. And Katie's there, too. For some reason. She learned how to shoot an arrow and she's an Avenger now. I guess that's all it takes. Hawkeye proved that.
Listen.
Sure.
Listen, I like Katie enough, and I don't think we talked about this enough. I think those two have.
I'm not saying I don't like Katie. I like Katie. But is she Avenger status? Is she an Avenger status character?
Listen, sometimes Thor brings around freaking Natalie Portman and no one says anything. And sometimes Iron Man Pepper's there for some reason. And we're just like, whatever. I mean, I'd rather see Awkwafina because I just think she's a more fun character.
She is a more fun character and I do want to see more of her. But at least those were like love interests. She's just like... a person.
Well, I think, I don't know about...
He's like, yeah, this is my bud. Can my friend come on our...
I think she's gonna...
Yeah, universe-saving adventure.
I think there's no reason why they're not gonna be a love interest down the line. And I like the idea that they're just good buds at first and they're gonna become that eventually. I like,
I think they should just stay buds. I think that'd be fun.
It could be fun. But I think there's no way that they had such a nice hug at the end of the movie. I was like, ah, they're so cute. And they have chemistry like no other Marvel couple does. Like, honestly, think about it. Like, think of a Marvel couple that has more chemistry. I think besides Vision and Scarlet Witch. Give me one. Go ahead. Do it, Ricardo.
I feel like we've had a version of this conversation where I think they're all bad. I'm trying to think of one that's not.
There's no couple in the MCU that has chemistry. Vision and Scarlet Witch. That's the only one that has chemistry. The only one I'll put on paper.
And even then, that was retroactive.
Yeah. I can't... You know who would? Like, if they were together, like, Steve and Scarlet... what's her name? Steve and Black Widow would, maybe. But other than that... But they're not even together. Like, that's the thing, is that they...
Again, they're just buds. Yeah. Just like, you know, Shang-Chi and Katie could be.
Yeah, but, like, if they have the... I think they'd make a cute couple. I think it'd be a good pairing, and I'm here for it. I love their chemistry in the movie. I think that's why I felt so... It was so easy to get behind them, was the fact that their friendship was so strong and their... And
oh, yeah, you feel immediately when they show up. You're like, all right, I can ride with these guys for 2 hours.
Yeah. I like that they do karaoke. And I don't even like karaoke. I enjoy those scenes. But yeah, overall, I love this movie. I don't have that many... I can't think of that many negative things. I think if there's one, it's like The Dweller in Darkness and Trevor... But other than that,
it's a little, you know, by the book Marvel, but you know, it's a fun time. I enjoyed it. The dialogue could use a little work. I don't, it stands out to me whenever I hear the we've been friends for this amount of years, you know, how we say in real life.
Oh, yes. They all got it. They all have it.
Like that. That stuff always kind of stands out to me.
Oh, and I just wanted to throw out this theory, and I I've seen it before, but I do want to say I did think of this before I saw it. I want to throw this out. Shang-Chi does admit to the fact that he does kill the person. And we see earlier in the film that Katie's grandpa is dead. I think that you get what I'm coming. You get what I'm saying. Like,
is this your fan theory? I'm hearing
this is like my whole like this is gonna be the Civil War reveal. You know what I mean? Like the is that Katie's gonna get really good with the bow and arrow, and the movie's gonna be Shang-Chi fighting Katie because Katie finds out that Shang killed her grandfather. Or maybe her dad, because her dad wasn't in the room either. It could be either one of them. Or both of them. I don't know. But I think Shang-Chi is hanging around with Katie because of... At first, because of guilt. And that's my theory I'm throwing out there.
You think he just winter soldiered her?
That's what I'm saying.
Just like he did to that old man?
Yep. I'm 100% down with that, because I think... That's why they're going to be love interests in the second movie, and in the third movie they're going to reveal it, and that's going to be the whole thing. That's I'm throwing it out there now. It's September 6th, 2021. Let me know if you guys think the same.
We didn't even mention he gets the rings.
Oh, yeah.
Like Shang-Chi, he is the Ten Rings now. The title makes sense. He has the rings.
I didn't think that's where the movie was going, and we also had this discussion, I think, yesterday, but I was like... If he got the Ten Rings, I assumed he'd be the villain at the end of the movie. I assumed it would be a corrupting force for him, and he would be the new Mandarin for the MCU. But that is not the case. He is, in fact, a hero. And I'm here with it. I'm cool with it. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, man. He used to be, you know, just a guy who could punch real good. But now he's a superhero. He's got them rings. He can shoot lasers.
I hope they eventually do the... Shang-Chi ability, which I really like, is that he can duplicate himself. And so he'll just be doing these mad...
Oh, I didn't even know he could do that.
Oh, yes, and it's really cool because he's so good at martial arts, it's basically like five guys beating the shit out of you. Doing these weird combos. It's awesome. I wanted to see that. I was hoping that's how he'd beat the Mandarin, but no. I hope they do that eventually down the line. But yeah, he's got the rings. I think with the rings, he's the top five. He's top five in the MCU right now, right? I think it's got to go Wanda, then Thor, Captain Marvel, Doctor Strange, Shang-Chi. I don't think there's anyone stronger than him other than those four. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a pretty good lineup.
Yeah, so like, good for him. He's killing it.
All in all, pretty decent. It's like a 7. Check it out.
I'm gonna go with an 8, 8.5. But yeah, check it out. Definitely see it in theaters. Support it, because if you do, that's why Venom moved up. So that's why we want to see more of these. It's doing good. I'm definitely gonna see it again. Let us know what you thought of Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Carter, you got anything to recommend to the good people at home this week?
Yeah, I do. You know what? I'm gonna keep it going. I've been watching another Awkwafina thing. Ooh. And that's Awkwafina is Nora from Queens, Season 2. The first 4 episodes are out right now. It's really good. It's the same character. If you liked Katie in Shang-Chi, you're going to love Nora from Queens. It's beat for beat, I think, almost the exact same character. Lives with her grandma and her dad. Doesn't... Like, has, like, a dead-end job. She works at a CBD store this season. So those are coming out on Comedy Central, but Season 1, all of it's on HBO Max. Check that out. I think you'd like it in particular.
I've been meaning to watch that, because I've only heard good things about it. And I also heard B.D. Wong is in it. I like B.D. Wong. So...
Yeah, he's her dad.
Oh, bet. Yeah. No, I'm probably gonna check that out right now, actually. Okay, cool.
What? You got, my man.
So every now and then, basically, we throw on like an old movie to clear the head, you know. So I've been watching. I've seen this twice in the past like 3 days. It's an old movie called Silver Linings Playbook. I believe it's like from 2014. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's with Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence.
I have not.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I just know, didn't she win an Oscar for that? That's all I really know about that movie.
I believe she did. It's probably my favorite rom-com. And I think the rom-com genre overall, a little oversaturated. Usually oversaturated with bad films. But this one is fantastic. It's Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Lawrence. And basically it follows Bradley Cooper after coming out of a psychiatric hospital. Because he had a... he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder after beating the shit out of a guy who was cheating on... who was sleeping with his wife. So he's just having a rough go of it. He's moved back home. His wife has filed... his ex-wife has now filed a restraining order on him. He's just having a rough time. And he meets this girl, Jennifer Lawrence, who has similar problems from him. And if you have a crazy family...
This is... This is a comedy?
This is a comedy. It's very funny. It's a little sad. It's a little bit dark. Robert De Niro is in it. Chris Tucker. A lot of very good actors. Trust me, it's one of the funnier movies. But, like, again, if you have, like, a crazy loud family, it's very relatable. It's all these people just screaming and stuff at one another. It's fantastic. It's got some of my favorite acting from Bradley Cooper in the movie. I saw it twice in the past 2 days. Fantastic. 10 out of 10 recommending it right now. And that's, I think, all we have for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Ricardo, where can the good people at home find you at?
Twitter, I guess. I'm out there. At Brickybrac. Check it out.
Yeah. Bet. You can actually follow me as well on Twitter at Action Remake Pod. And you can follow us at Live Action Remake on Facebook and Instagram. So check us out there. And be sure to email us at liveactionremakepodcast@gmail.com. And I think that pretty much wraps us up. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Miles, get your freaking vaccine. yeah, we're signing out.